This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. I'm your host, Mike Rappin, editor-in-chief for Destroy the Cyborg. With me this week are two fantastic people, Nick White, comic book contributor for the site, and Brian Murray, friend of the site and sometimes contributor to the site. Thank you guys for joining me this week. How you guys been? How have comic books been?
Comics have been great. It's been a busy time for the Marvel fan.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I forgot. I'm so excited. This week we actually have two big Marvel fans on the show, or at least big enough, right?
Yeah, me and Mike, and Brian, I don't know what the fuck you read, but
how you been, Nick?
Good. Been reading Marvel. All new, all different, all number ones, all renumbered since the last time they were renumbered. Yeah. Great super gold $7 issue. Get it now. Thank God DC doesn't do that shit.
You know, I actually picked up a copy of the Unbeatable Squirrel Girl number one, mostly because I really like the hip-hop variant cover, and I'm an asshole, and I bought it. But yeah. I redeemed it on Marvel's site to bring it over to my Comixology library, and it actually has the official cover rather than the hip-hop cover. And on the big, right across the top on the cover, it says, only our second number one so far this year, which I, for some reason, got a nice kick out of this morning.
No,
I
love
looking
that.
At it.
I love that.
At least they recognize that this is a bunch of bullshit. So, from my understanding, apparently that series, just the number one picks off right where the last series left off. Like, there's no reintroduction of anything. It's just like, all right, this should technically be number 8 or number 9 or whatever.
Well, but, it's starting off at the beginning of their sophomore year of college, whereas the first...
Don't okay. try to legitimate this, Brian.
I'll legitimize whatever I want, Nick.
Oh no, I brought the two like English writing major people on the one podcast. Oh shit.
It's fine. We've worked together before.
Yeah. But what have you guys been reading lately? Let's just jump right into what have we been reading. Brian, what's on your diet? What have you been reading the last couple weeks?
Sure. I mean, it's been a lot of those new Marvel number ones. All new, all different Avengers. I enjoyed that one. The Extraordinary X-Men is pretty cool. I'm kind of curious to see how they're gonna bring back the mutant gene this time.
Oh man, you should listen to last week's episode. I had a big long rant, so you should just take a listen. Take a listen. That's all.
I don't listen to this podcast. Are you kidding?
Brian, ex-friend of the show.
Yeah,
my big pick or my big favorite from last week was Web Warriors number one. And that's kind of the continuation, if not in content, then certainly in spirit of the Spider-Verse stuff.
Okay.
So it's all the different spider folks from different universes banding together to kind of look after the universes that no longer have their own spider person.
Wait, so there are surviving universes after Secret Wars? Does this take place after Secret Wars? I mean, I guess where does this fall in the continuity?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay, okay.
Secret Wars is kind of this vague, nebulous backstory or backside
right.
to Marvel Comics. But it's really fun. I feel like they capture the different personalities of the different characters pretty well. It's like, you know, if you read Spider-Gwen, then Spider-Gwen acts like Spider-Gwen does in her own book.
Mm-hmm.
Mayday Parker is another one of the characters, and... Again, you know, she acts like Spider-Woman does in her own book.
Gotcha.
But in issue one, they just had just discovered that the Electros of different universes also figured out how to move around.
And which one's targeting... Electro and which one's Shocker? I can never get this right.
Shocker is two fingers extended and then the pinky extended.
Oh my god. I read comic books. It's now NC-17. And this Marvel book is now going to be published under the whatever that is, the Max imprint or whatever.
Oh, this is the most professional podcast we've ever done. I'm so happy.
Oh, Jesus.
Electro,
this is what happens when I talk about Marvel books. This is why I don't talk about Marvel books. I hope this is a lesson for everybody. You know, because we over in DC, we don't name characters stupid shit like that. We don't name them after Dane Cook jokes.
Oh, God.
Anyways.
Yeah, so, which one is the one that has, like,
If you've seen the Amazing Spider-Man 2 movie, Electro is the bad guy in that.
Right. Yeah, but he looks so different than normal that I honestly can't remember. Is he the one that has, like, the mask that covers his face and he's sort of yellow and brown? Red and yellow?
Has,
I'm thinking of, like,
the
animated
series.
He has the mask
that looks like a giant sun on his head.
He's like, got the mask that has the, like, the white lightning bolts coming off
of it. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
He's not the one with the mask covering his face.
Shocker was the one that has, like, the yellow bodysuit.
Yellow and
brown
red slash brown. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Why did Spider-Man have to go and have not one, but two adversaries with, like, electrical abilities? Oh, man. Anyway, sorry, it's stupid.
So Web Warriors was good. So this is like a team book with all different spider people, right?
Right. It's Mayday Parker, Spider-Gwen, UK Spider is in there.
Is that his name?
No, it's, they just call him like Spider-UK, I think.
What? Okay.
They ought to call him Spider-Chap. Missed opportunity.
Spider bloke.
I don't know why that one sounds a little inappropriate. I think Chap is better.
Nick, you've got something dirty in your mind, man. You got to get
that out. I didn't start this.
Well, you gave me an opportunity for a butt joke, and I can't just walk away from that.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what? Interesting fact. I saw a panel, I think it was from this book, on Reddit, I believe. Is this the one where Spider-Gwen walks into an office and it's like that 1970s Spider-Man meme where he's sitting behind a desk and she's like, what are you doing anyway?
No way.
Yes.
I thought that was like a fan art thing.
Well,
no, that's in this
that
issue.
Because it was from the
70s
cartoon.
I know of the meme. Yeah. I just thought that panel was like a piece of fan art or something like that.
No.
Oh, I didn't even realize it was actually from the book.
It's from the old animated show.
They explain it as being like they were looking for a non-lethal universe in which they could like train against these villains.
Oh,
and
no.
So they found like a universe where everything is like stupid and cartoony. And that's where they go to practice their teamwork.
I saw that panel and I showed it to Jordan and I was like, I don't care what the rest of this book is. 10 out of 10. Done. Doesn't matter.
This is how we'll get Nick to read Marvel books.
Yeah.
Anyways, Nick, what did you read this week? And Brian, feel free to just interject and just go, like, run Nick off the rails with this.
Yeah.
Just as
let
he
me,
did to you.
Let me get through one and then derail it, because I think that would probably put us on the same level. So that's totally fair. I finally got around to Batman 45. Fantastic read. Absolutely great read. There's one more issue left in Super Heavy. And 45 ends on a fantastic note. Normally this is where we say I'm not going to spoil it, but, which is just a really long way of saying spoilers, because we're going to. But it's a great twist. Gordon has been found out that he's been running the suit off the grid, and he's about to get shuffled off to put someone else in the suit that goes within the bigger suit. And then Bloom shows up. So, really good. Harrow County, I don't know what's going on. Maybe I'm just reading a whole bunch of Evil Twin books. Descender, like I said, the other robot, probably an evil twin. Harrow County, got another evil twin, except this one we know is decidedly evil. She already goes into the town where the good one lives and pretends to be the good one and does some really, really awful shit. So that book took a great turn. I read some Evil Dead from the Humble Bundle, and all I have to say is I haven't seen the new show, but maybe it has a better twist, because Evil Dead, it seems like you can only do the same premise 18 million times.
18 million and one is too many.
Exactly. At a certain point, you have to draw the line of how many times the Necronomicon can accidentally be activated and Ash ends up going through time and Ash ends up killing people and coming back to his time, but not when he wanted to. You can only do that so many times.
You'd think that he'd like hide that thing under a mattress or something.
Yeah. Honestly. I mean, the only
places.
Right, that's exactly. Fort Knox, nah. Mattress, mm-hmm. You'd think at some point...
No one's going to look there.
Right.
This is true.
The worst part is when you're done reading a bunch of this, really, Ashley Williams is actually, like, the culprit. He is the idiot who continues to let this perpetuate, which I guess, take that for what you will. I guess he's charming. Bruce Campbell, what can I say? The legend with the chin. Justice League United continued to throw all sorts of weird characters. They actually included G.I. Zombie. This book is just continuing. They know they're going to end, and they're just like, here is all of this weird stuff. we are going to go out on a note that no one is going to want to read except for all of those weirdos. So there's that. And I guess the biggest thing that I would really want to focus on is that Rebels, I finally got around to reading the first issue after the first arc ended. The first arc was a little bit long. It went for 6 issues, which these days seems like a bit of a longer arc. And it was really weird because the way the first arc wrapped, it was the end of the Revolutionary War in terms of the character they were following at that point. And I said, well, what else
could you do with that series if you're no longer a rebel against the British Army?
Well, they pick it up in the Star Wars universe. That was the end of the war,
and I went home, and I was like, maybe
Dark Horse
this book...
just secretly hiding that Star Wars play. Fast forward to the future past.
Yeah, he just goes home, and there's like a X-wing on fire in the front yard, and he's like, Uncle Owen, no. Rebels, we're not bitter about that franchise cash cow that we lost, or Rebels, ellipses, at least we still have Hellboy, ellipses. No, I was like, where are they going to go with this? And for a while, I was really interested with the idea that maybe they were going to sort of show the early days of the country, but then having the title still be Rebels is weird. And maybe not appropriate.
I wonder if they're going to, like, cut to the Civil War or something.
Yeah. It just turns, yeah, it's just, yeah, exactly. It just turns into, like, the next cover as, like, all of the Johnny Rebs on the front, and I'm like, this is not what I signed up for.
Yeah.
Brian Wood. But they went and did a one-shot, which was sort of based on the idea of Molly Pitcher, who I'm sure you've heard of.
Never heard of her.
I was about to fill you in if you don't know the core tenets of American folklore, and that's okay. American school system failing. So she was this legendary character she's more of a composite character myth of this woman who her husband got injured on the battlefield during the Revolutionary War. They called her Molly Pitcher because they used to carry pitchers of water to cool down the cannons. She was
and
one
she
of
had
those
a
people.
Wicked curveball.
Yeah. Park the car. That's all I know. And so she took her husband's place and fired the cannon for the rest of the battle, and they won, probably just because of her, just kidding. But the story attempts to tell the narrative of the closest person, historical person we know who did something similar to the composite character. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I realize we're getting kind of muddied here. Anyway, it's a really good one-shot, beautiful art from the guy who did Northlanders. I should mention this is a Brian Wood read. And it actually focuses a lot on the role of women in combat, which is obviously still a hotly debated issue centuries later, and the treatment of veterans who, you know, fought in wars, which I guess that's maybe slightly a redundant statement. But
which
obviously,
we still don't know what the hell we're doing about.
Right, and exactly, and that's the whole point. Isn't it interesting that we're still dealing with these issues later? Wonderful issue, totally changed my mind on whether or not I'm actually going to keep reading this if it continues this format. This month, it's one issue split into 2 one-shots. Next month is another one-shot, and then I think we're going to actually have another arc from the British side. So really interesting. Brian Wood is experimenting all over the place with this, getting some totally different perspectives of this conflict. A lot of history in a you know, obviously very important conflict for the formation of our country, and one that a lot of people still don't know a lot about. So that's my big plug or my big narrative for this week. Fantastic read. Would definitely encourage people to try this book at some point.
Gotcha. Well, for me, I bought a bunch of comics this week, like my regular pulls. I ended up picking up Twilight Children #2 because I realized that it's a 4-issue mini. And
fuck, I forgot to pick that.
I haven't read #1 yet, but I think that I'm just gonna see this whole series through. From what I did read of #1, I really liked it. The first couple pages that I read through on the train. But I didn't read much. I did reread a little bit of One Punch Man #1 because I started watching the show, which is on Hulu, and it's the greatest like anime that I think I've ever seen in my entire life, simply because it's like they took the creator of this show, or creator of this manga, I should say, because it started as a manga, The creator of this manga must have like the deepest love for all of anime and all of manga, because he's like mocking it in like the best way possible, like just talking about like how ridiculous superpowered villains are and stuff. Like, if you basically, you know, being seen that like Dragon Ball Z is probably the anime that I've seen the most of, and Bleach, I guess, to a certain extent, knowing those two shows and knowing what I know about Naruto and a handful of other shows that are out there, this manga is just taking all of the ridiculous like power-ups and backstories and weirdness of those books and then just flipping them on their ear and saying it's all stupid because there's this one guy who can just punch and kill any enemy and no one can stop him. And he's just like a super, like, he calls himself a superhero on the side, like for fun, because there's no sense in him going out and fighting all these people because he could just beat them in a second. So it's, I reread a little bit of that after watching some of the anime, and it's hilarious just how ridiculous that the whole concept is. So I highly recommend you go on Hulu and watch the first episode of this show, because if you have any appreciation for like satire and anime like combined, this is the perfect show for you.
Well, so that's good. Now that I'm paying $12 a month for Hulu Plus,
yeah,
I'm looking for stuff on Hulu.
Yeah,
they have a pretty good selection of anime. Are you paying for the tier above that?
I'm paying for the tier with no ads.
With no ads.
You are the only person I know who has made that jump. You are a bold person.
Yeah.
Well, it's one of those things where, like, if somebody had come up to me and said, "Hey, here's Hulu for $12 a month," I would have been like, "I'm good." Yeah. But I was already paying $8 a month. And they're like, "Hey, for $4 more, you can get it ad free."
Yeah.
They're tricky.
And seeing
tricksy,
how
tricksy,
like,
who loses.
Well, seeing how annoying those ads are, like, ugh. But so instead of reading comics this week, I actually sat down and watched all three Star Wars movies in a go. Or I should say the original trilogy in a go. From 9 p.m. until almost 4 in the morning. It was a very long night for me. So I'm all Star Wars'd up, and then I sat on Twitter for like a half hour and talked to a buddy of mine all about all the potential what ifs and rumors and all these different things of Star Wars: The Force Awakens and how it all potentially ties in. And then there's the whole theory about Jar Jar Binks being like a key player in the entire series, being the ultimate evil Sith Lord. If you haven't read that, I will find the link to like the big Reddit post where someone wrote down this very well crafted, with GIF supported, like theory about how Jar Jar Binks is the most powerful like Sith Lord in all of the universe.
That's one of those things that, like, I saw that when it was on Reddit and I was like, oh, ha. And then it's just been fucking everywhere since then. Like,
it was
on
up.
Like John Oliver or something like that. Like, it was on some TV show I was watching.
Yeah. That wouldn't surprise me.
It's an interesting idea. I mean, I think a lot of that can be thrown out the window perhaps by the notion that if this was part of a grand master plan, then Jar Jar would have had to have conceivably maybe been in... Not to fan this fire anymore.
Please do. But,
okay, yeah, sure. Conceivably, he would have had to have been in the works for 4, 5, and 6 and then just not revealed at all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Otherwise, this is, you know, some concept from 1, 2, 3 that they're attempting to retroactively, you know, inject through the narrative's full sequence.
And maybe
and
fix all of the problems that Jar Jar had in the original three. But nonetheless, I'll let the listener...
Not the racist,
you know,
thing.
Yeah.
He's still a racist caricature.
You can read the article or read the post on Reddit. I'll post it in the show notes, but...
How bad did you feel that the guy who actually played Jar Jar is seeing all this? He's like, damn, I'm going to get some work. Daddy's going to get paid.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I feel so bad for that guy. I've heard he can't go to, like, he can't even bank on comic conventions because, of course, no one wants to, you know, see him, put up with him, associate, pay him money, patronize him in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
Same
anyways,
thing with that Jake
anyways
Lloyd.
Anyways
yeah, sorry
let's, I'm, let's
you
move,
open that
let's
door
move
you can't
on. I'm sorry
you can't
I,
bring up Star Wars with me
I, yeah. I, re- yeah, I realize right? that as someone who has said many times I don't care about Star Wars, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
Talking to the two people in the world who care the most about Star Wars.
yeah I'm sorry that we'll do a whole episode just on Star Wars stuff another day, I promise.
What a bonus.
Now that we've just discussed all of our, well, you know, what we've read for the last week or two, let's actually talk about what's coming out this week. So, Nick, what's your comic pick for this week?
That's a great question, Mike, and thankfully I have thoughtfully prepared an answer for you.
Thank you. I'm so glad that you're prepared this one week.
Yeah, for this one thing. You got it. We'll see what happens in the future. My pick for this week is Wrath of the Eternal Warrior, number one from Valiant. Surprise, surprise, it's a Valiant book. But guess what?
Oh, man.
Yeah, I know. Everyone's shocked. You know what? I have a small poll this week. It was going to be Bloodshot Reborn, and then because I'm not a responsible person on Comixology's pull list, a lot of times when I add new books at my comic book store, I forget to add them to Comixology. And so,
I'm the same way.
And then so every week, because I don't realize that this is horribly inefficient, every week I have to scroll through every single page of what's coming out and basically fill in, you know, dot all the I's and cross all the T's.
Oh, man.
Long story short, that's how I ended up with Wrath of the Eternal Warrior. For those who aren't aware, this directly follows the events of Book of Death, where, and we've spoiled it before, or I've spoiled it before, so I feel like I can somehow, that somehow allows me to continue it, that Eternal Warrior died at the end of Book of Death, quote-unquote died, though.
We all know how much death means in comic books.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. And I think that's what's sort of funny about it, is that instead of, you know, putting on airs or whatever and saying, well, he's dead and let's go for six issues, assuming that he's really dead and just to keep up the effect. But that's about it, guys. We can only do about six. Then we lose the chance of actually, then we actually have the chance of losing readers. So we have to reel him back in. No. This book right off the bat is like, he's in this limbo state and he's talking to this weird demonic creature. And the creature just flat out says, look, you've been here before. You're here again. How long is it before you just go back into wherever you came from? So right off the bat, we know that he, you know, is merely stamping his frequent visitor card to limbo. But it's a weird sort of limbo. As I think I've told you guys before, or mentioned on this podcast before, at first it kind of looks like hell, but then there's this weird transition, and all of a sudden it's him in a house with kids and a wife, which, as you know, Brian suggested, that is true hell. Just kidding. I'm sure some people
Limbo is an episode of Leave It to Beaver.
Yeah.
Yeah. In our previous recording before my computer decided to shit itself, yes.
That's right. I was actually not going to clarify that, so people would actually have to dig through a whole bunch of recordings and be like, where did this happen? And then we could put out the lost tapes. Which would be great, but now we can't.
The guy with the board with all the push pins and the yarn is going to be very confused.
Exactly. And it's like we had an opportunity to create like canon and non-canon and like, is it kind of canon? We
have our own podcast canon.
Within three to four seconds, all of that just dissolved. So
Sorry.
That's okay. But it's weird. He goes into the situation where like the clothing and the things in the house and just the general look of things is just so chronologically all over the board that, is this a dream? Are we still in hell? Are we actually back on quote-unquote Earth or quote-unquote in the land of the living? I don't know. Weird mystery. Super interested to see where this goes. Raoul Allen on art is amazing. I love his cover work on Ivar. I love his cover work on Imperium. I know that he can do the job. His issue of Ninjak number 6 and Bloodshot Reborn number 5, where he actually did interior pencils, were fantastic. Hopefully, like Valiant's normal arc schedule, I think he'll have enough time to get things done. The only real question for me is whether or not Robert Venditti is maybe the best choice. I would have maybe preferred Matt Kint, who of course was writing Eternal Warrior as part of Unity, or Greg Pak, who wrote the first two arcs of the rebooted Eternal Warrior. But Venditti showed with Book of Death that he is he's definitely competent enough to handle a Eternal Warrior solo book. We'll see.
Don't insult the guy, jeez.
You know, exactly. You know what, Venditti, great job in Exo Man of War, great job in Book of Death, great job in Armor Hunters. Maybe I just would have liked Matt Kent, but prove me wrong.
Matt Kent can only write so many books, man. The guy's on like 15 books or something.
You know, we say that every time we look at how many books Matt Kent is writing, and then he adds like two more. So him and Charles Soule, I don't know how many 5-hour energies or whatever they're doing, but those two guys, what's going on? I feel like both just were like, Brian Michael Bendis is writing 4 books, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So that's my pick. What about you, Brian?
My pick for this week is going to be Extraordinary X-Men number 2. I've always, like, in my heart, I always wanted to be an X-Men fan, I think. And maybe part of that just comes from living with Mike and being surrounded by X-Men comics for so long.
So it wasn't really something you wanted. It's just something you knew in order to survive and adapt best to your surroundings. You were like, and I have to become part of Legion or whatever.
Well, Brian and I lived together
Darwin,
for a while.
Darwin, who joined X-Factor. And
yeah, I would always try to like add little nice anecdotes to our conversations. Well, if you read New X-Men by Grant Morrison, you'd find that Beast was actually not so bad. Or something.
And then Brian's like, we weren't talking about anything remotely related to that at all.
Yeah,
stop calling me and bringing these things up at 2 in the morning.
I just wake up like in that sleep paralysis state with Mike perched on the edge of my bed. Just let me talk about Nightcrawler for like 2 more minutes.
Mike's like, it sounds like you're mad and irritated. It's like that one time Nightcrawler showed up in X-Force 13 and no!
Yeah.
So is this the only X-Men book going on right now, or are there other X-Men books where they've taken positive adjectives and jammed them in front of the word X-Men to make new titles?
I think this is the only one going on right now.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're gonna split it off into 8 new titles inside of 2 months, I'm sure.
Good. Good.
Right.
And Mike's like, yes,
because I'm a slut for Marvel.
Oh my god.
It's gonna be on my tomb. My tomb.
I don't think Marvel's gonna roll out those bumper stickers anytime soon. But you can cross your fingers.
You can Mike's see like, Brian. I can see Brian's name quoted on the back of the first volume, Extraordinary X-Men, and he's like, "I'm a slut for Marvel." Like,
and then Mike's like, "Yeah, well, then what does that make me? I don't know."
It's gonna be the one thing anybody remembers about my time on the podcast. Like, yeah, he made the Shocker joke and then called himself a slut. Like.
Marvel is just like, look, we get your attitude, we get where you're coming from, this is like your shtick, but can you just diversify beyond Marvel, because it just seems like all of these things involve our titles.
Dear Brian, stop helping us. Love Marvel.
Anyways, so what's got you extra excited about this book, Brian?
I like the cast of characters in this. You know, we've got Colossus, we've got Nightcrawler, Storm. Well, Nightcrawler was kidnapped in issue 1, spoilers, mm-hmm. I guess. But I'm assuming he's going to be on the team after they rescue him. Storm looks like she's leading the team, which is always cool. I always liked Storm as a character. I'm excited to see what she does, kind of holding the reins.
Can I ask where Cyclops is? Because when I think of true leadership and
don't be an asshole
beams,
right now, Nick.
Laser
don't
beams.
Don't be an asshole.
from what I gathered from reading the first issue, it sounds like Cyclops kind of went, like, totally fascist crazy and was put down.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's...
Was that the Colin Bunn book, or is that the Magneto book, and I'm confusing it?
You're thinking the Magneto book.
Okay.
But, yeah, after that first issue, there is some heavy implications that some real bad shit went down with Cyclops. It's... Ugh,
oh,
man.
We don't know? We don't know
Yeah,
exactly
we don't know.
What... Oh. Huh.
I just figured it was because I hadn't read the thousands of X books leading up to this.
So the long and short of it is, and they don't even say this in the comic, which pisses me off. Extraordinary X-Men takes place 8 months after, I think, the end of Secret Wars. And so whatever happened in that 8 months, and I kind of mentioned this last week on the podcast, but whatever happened in that 8 months, we don't know about, and we're like getting little trickles of information, like the Terrigenesis mist, the Terrigen mist is what's, you know, poisoning the X-Men, and like some bad shit happened to where the X-Men had to like run away forever. That's what that whole X-Haven thing was. So. Sorry, not to hijack your
no, it's fine.
Your pick, Brian, but yeah,
it's good to have.
There's
the
a lot of questions.
In.
Yeah. So, I guess, then my pick for this week is Rat Queens number 13, which is the Curtis Wiebe and Tess Fowler book. I actually looked up the information for this book, and the cover's by Stefan Sajic, and I was saying that, I said this in our last recording, and I'll say it again. I really, really enjoy Tess Fowler's art, simply because the art definitely feels like a Dungeons & Dragons style, like, action-adventure, but, like, dwarves and elves and magic users and cool shit. Like, it feels like art that would come out of an actual D&D handbook or playbook or whatever you want to call it, or Pathfinder or something, where it's just got this rustic feel to it in a way, where unlike what Rock Upchurch and Stefan Sajic brought to the or Stepan Sajic.
Stepan Sajic.
Yeah, brought to the series where it was like neo fantasy, like, and it wasn't bad by any means, but I think that getting back to what Rat Queens feels like, which is a D&D style story where there's a lot of fun and hilarious jokes and action and adventure, this art totally works with the book, and I'm really, really loving it.
As long as they're not going back like the second edition Monster Manual style art,
yeah.
Which,
yeah, yeah, no,
if you've never seen, please look it up.
What does that mean?
Oh, yeah, it's some really goofy-looking art.
It's just, like, pencil drawings that look like they were made by, like, a gorilla who's just holding a pencil clenched in one fist.
Yeah, who had some sort of art capability, and they're like, I guess this is good enough because it didn't cost us any money.
Right, because that was back when D&D had, like, an $8 budget to put out an entire new edition of the game. Like,
exactly. So this,
great. You guys want to play 5.0 anytime soon?
Hey,
the only D&D joke I know.
5.0 has got some pretty beautiful art in it. It's got a rocking little halfling that, you know, is playing on a mandolin.
Like,
so that's
like
cool.
Leaning into it real hard.
Oh yeah,
like,
it's awesome. You got two D&D nerds here. Sorry,
I was about to say. I was like, do you like? You guys are both referencing the same image, like, and you're like,
yeah,
oh,
dude.
Man, I know what you mean. And I'm like, I can't believe this.
I think Brian bought the books when I was still in Michigan, and we saw that page, and we just laughed our asses off at it. It's because of how ridiculous the image is.
Meanwhile, somewhere John Francois just like looked up from whatever he's doing right now, and is like wondering, like, why.
Why his ears are burning.
Yeah, he just, like, he knows that we're talking about D&D. He doesn't know the context or anything. He just, he can feel
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Deep in his bones.
So Rat Queens number 13 is my pick. I'm really excited for this book. It's a little, the story's been a little bit slower as they've been building up to Hannah's Mage University storyline. And I think you guys both told me that you read this in trade, so I'm not going to spoil too much. But the story's been a little bit slower, and it feels kind of like they're slowly building up to a bigger point in the one character storyline, which they've done a pretty good job doing so far in the series. This arc just feels a little bit slower than the last two, so it's kind of been me sitting there tapping my foot waiting for like the actual action to happen, which I realize that's not all what these comic books are, but I mean, and there was a nice little fight against the monsters, but nonetheless, I'm still really enjoying this series. Like, this is going to be on my pull for as long as this book is coming out, hands down. So anyways, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about comic book news. Not in the sense of news topics, but about where we get our comic book news. So we'll be back in just a quick second. So the question I want to ask you guys this week is kind of a weird and vague and very open question, as we've kind of been, you know, trending towards the last couple of episodes, but where do you guys get your comic news? And this is something that might be, like, it's like I said, it's very open, but it's where do you guys find out new information about comics, or do you find out, you know, what you want to read or get reviews or get, you know, information about the industry? Like, what are your go-to places for that kind of stuff?
Well, for me, at least, I usually start with what will probably not surprise anybody, websites.
Yeah.
There are a few websites that I prefer, or at least I frequent more than others, and I can, of course, discuss some of those briefly, and I'm sure you'll have some thoughts on those anyway, Mike.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, the first one I usually tend to go to is Bleeding Cool, bleedingcool.com.
Okay.
And in terms of, if you want to talk about who is quote-unquote ahead of the curve, like who tends to get news first and then the other sites tend to follow either by reading it from Bleeding Cool or getting it from wherever they get it from, I suppose. Bleeding Cool does tend to be ahead of the curve. They also have a tendency to not shy away from what I would call, maybe sometimes it's sort of a social commentary on the interior workings of the comic book industry,
mm-hmm.
which is frequently, or sometimes at least, not always thoroughly vetted, or
kind
of can be a little bit, or at least it seems to be a little bit off the cuff sometimes, which usually is followed by corrections later, or other sites being mad about it, or other sites reporting on Bleeding Cool for maybe getting things wrong, or creators going to Twitter and maybe getting mad about it. But that doesn't discount the fact that a lot of times Bleeding Cool tends to get their information first, usually thanks to insider sources, which are frequently not discussed. But that being said, all of this being said, if you go into Bleeding Cool knowing that this is how things tend to be, and take things with a grain of salt, or if something sounds a little weird, going to a creator's Twitter page, or going to another website, another news website, to sort of authenticate or vet it, Bleeding Cool is still valuable in the sense that, for some reason, they're always ahead of things, somehow.
And they've been around forever, haven't they?
Mike, I don't think they've been around forever.
They've been around for easily like 8 years. Rich Johnston, who's the guy that kind of runs the whole site, he's been in like the quote unquote comics reporting game for many, many years. I couldn't tell you the specifics, but I know that his name has been something that I've heard about nonstop. Like he's always been around in the sense that since I've been reading comics and like researching comics, like Bleeding Cool has always been a site that existed. I mean, my thoughts on that site are kind of, I don't know, torn, because a lot of the times I'm like, yeah, I use them as like a reference when I find out about something or I want to know more about something. But then I always have to take it with like 10 pounds of salt, because I feel like they publish articles just for fun to say like, this is something we think might happen because of some rumors. And it's like, what? There's no ground to that. It's like, it's tabloid journalism in a lot of cases. And sure, I think they do a pretty good job of covering like comic book sum ups. Like for instance, when I wanted to make sure that I was reading everything for X-Men, it was like them and Comic Vine had articles about like, here's what you need to know about reading up to, or what's happened, you know, since Uncanny X-Men 600 came out. And I was like, okay, I need to read up this to make sure I didn't miss anything. But like for the most part, a lot of their articles when it comes to industry news are just like blathering. But on the other side of things, I think they do a pretty good job at some of the reviews. They do, I mean, they cover toys, comics, movies, TV. They do everything. So it's a lot to take in if you're reading every single article that they put out. But I don't know. Brian, do you read this site at all?
I don't. I'm kind of a bad comic books fan, and I don't really pay attention to what's happening. I go to the store on Wednesday and I get the books that I think look neat. And then I find out, you know, months later that there was some huge drama going on or something like that.
Gotcha. Sorry to just break away from this, Nick, but, so if you're not reading, you know, websites to keep yourself up to date every week, probably like Nick and I are, where are you following things? Cause that's like a path that I don't take, you know, like I'm one of those types of people that needs to be like up to date as often as I possibly can. So if you're like kind of like leaning back and you know, just being more casual about it, like how do you find out things otherwise? Is it just like going to the comic shop and talking to the people there, or is it some other outlet?
That's part of it, going and talking to the folks at the comic book shop. I get a lot of like when I find out that a book is coming out, it's generally from a podcast. Either this podcast or the Super Skull podcast that Vault of Midnight puts out.
Okay.
I listen to Less Than Live with Kate or Die. It's Kate Leth, who...
Oh, okay.
She's worked in... She's done webcomics. She writes for a bunch of different comics now.
Yeah, I think she did a comic for that Fresh Romance book that I was reading.
Yep.
She did some... Lumberjacks, I think, or she might be the editor on it. I can't remember.
I don't think she's... got anything official with Lumberjanes. I think she's just an enthusiastic fan. But she wrote the Edward Scissorhands title that was coming out. She's done some Bravest Warriors. She's done some Adventure Time trades. And I just, after listening to the first couple of episodes, I kind of got the feel that she and I are on the same page on a lot of stuff. So generally any comic book recommendations that she gives out, you know, like, I know that I can trust her recommendations. Like, if she thinks something is cool, I'm probably also going to think it's cool.
Gotcha. That's cool. I think you've mentioned that podcast to me probably a half dozen times. I have yet to check it out. I should probably do that. So, in that regard, I Googled her. So, she's, like, all over the internet. She's pretty awesome. She works at Comics Alliance a little bit, and that's actually a site that I trust quite a bit with my news. Like, if I'm looking for something that's like an in-depth article or like a very well-informed review, usually Comics Alliance is a site that I tend to check out. On top of, you know, the Bleeding Cool that you'll come across, or comic book resources, or Newsarama. And a lot of that gets filtered through the comic book subreddit, because I'm real lazy and I'm just like, all right, let's find the cream, I guess, and go through the comic book subreddit. And then I realize that the cream is soiled and it's actually not that great. So then I have to do, you know, my own independent search. And so a lot of times it's just like, what's a popular topic among a lot of comic book fans in that specific forum, since I spend a lot of time there as a moderator, because I'm fancy and I'm a moderator over there, but also as just like a place where I know that there's a lot of people with very differing opinions talking about comics and mostly complaining about Brian Michael Bendis. So Nick, you probably have a couple more, so let's get back to you. So if you're not reading Bleeding Cool, what else are you checking out?
Yeah, website-wise, I find Newsarama and comic book resources to be pretty valuable. It is true that they do, if you read multiple sites, like especially a bunch that I've listed off, your mileage may vary in terms of how redundant things get, and of course I've realized that myself. But I do think comic book resources reviews are pretty good. Mm-hmm. I do think Newsarama, again, just... You get a lot of the same information between all of them. My biggest issue with some of the sites now, and maybe this is merits a complaint or not, but a lot of them aren't what I would say are quote-unquote true or quote-unquote strictly comic books sites anymore. I mean, I think even Bleeding Cool 2 or 3 years ago, and it might have not even been that long, was just comic books. But then they branched out, and now they do... Now, if you look at the top of the page, that's why you have those tabs for TV and video games now.
Yeah.
And that can get a little bit frustrating, too. I mean, I recognize that in the last 3 to 4 years, the characters and ideas and storylines and concepts from comic books have permeated pop culture on the whole. And so maybe that necessitates this diversified catch-all approach that previously I'd only seen with maybe like IGN's take on comic books, where they're like, yeah, we do comic books, but we also do like 18 million other things.
Yeah.
But you're certainly seeing it with other sites. And that being said, you're certainly seeing less sites that are strictly devoted to comic books, which can get a little bit tricky. I mean, that even starts to muddy the idea of what is comic book news. Like if there's an update about Batman versus Superman, the movie, Do we consider that comic book news or not? Or if there's a video game
that
adaptation?
Any kind of news.
Oh,
shots fired!
Oh boy.
Shots fired!
Nice try, Brian. I don't really want to see that movie. So if you were trying to, you know, just strike a real blow there.
No, that wasn't a personal attack. That was
I'm more of a Suicide Squad kind of guy. So, but
yeah,
it brings up that whole issue of do you want all of that other stuff? Do you consider that to be comic book news as well, or do you just sort of are you sort of like, you know what, when I want the broader approach to things, or you know, the bigger big picture, I'll go after it. But otherwise, I just want actual comic books that show up on Wednesday and are 22 pages. I want news restricted to that. You know what I mean? And so it's harder to find sites that just do that.
Totally. So and this kind of like leads into the next part of this discussion is, you know, why do these resources that you use work for you, and maybe what are the shortcomings? You know, if your problem with, you know, Bleeding Cool or with comic book resources or whatever is that they push TV and movies together in with comic news, is that a problem for you? Do you enjoy it? I mean, like, where do you guys sit on those kinds of things? Or I guess, like, if with your specific, like, number one go-to type of way of finding out news, like, what are the great parts and what are the, I guess, drawbacks?
Right. Certainly, like I was saying, it can be a bit of an issue if you are honestly looking for news about comic books, and they're like, well, here's a preview for tomorrow's Walking Dead episode, and here's some stuff about the Spider-Man video game. It doesn't totally bug me, as you can obviously filter that stuff out, but it doesn't change the fact that the site has orientated itself in such a way that their focus has changed a bit. I find that frequently what I'll do in addition to going to the news websites is I find creators I find in the comic book industry, obviously, because unlike a video game development studio or a movie development studio, creators are obviously just usually two or three or four people, and so they're frequently on Twitter showing you art that they're working on or discussing the upcoming plot or hinting at something that's you know, around the corner, or discussing some of the how things work on the inside of the industry. Mm-hmm. And so I find Twitter is another fantastic resource to go with. Obviously, your mileage may vary based on who you choose to follow,
yeah,
or what sites you choose, right, to follow. I mean, if you follow Scott Snyder, Gail Simone, Mike Henderson, just to name a few, you're gonna have a great time. just them alone. Now, yeah, I should warn you, some creators are more careful than others about, like, revealing things. Like, Scott Snyder will occasionally post, he'll be like, I just got this page from Greg Capullo. So, if you're someone that even that bothers you, stay away from Twitter, because a lot of these people, rightfully so, are very, you know, very proud and excited about what they're doing, and they're not, mm-hmm, going to post a spoiler warning every time.
Yeah.
Sure.
I guess I totally forgot about Twitter as a resource. I think that's where I follow a bunch of different news websites via their Twitter. So therefore, yeah, I don't even go to the website so much as I just wait for their articles to get posted online. Do you do anything like that, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, I do that with destroythecyb.org, actually.
Woohoo!
I follow the I
the
follow
money
the
will keep flowing, Brian. Keep it up.
Your checks are
filled. It's another $5.
Yeah,
I follow the Tumblr account, and
yeah,
so
$5.
Whenever I'm just like going down my Tumblr feed, occasionally I'll see like, oh, a new review got posted to destroythecyb.org.
Mm-hmm.
This looks like something I'd be interested in. Sure, I'll click on this and go read it.
Gotcha. So actually, that actually brings up a really interesting point. I never really considered Tumblr as like a potential place to get news. Do you? I mean, other than our site, like, do you follow any other like creators or any other like websites that would be posting things like that?
Oh yeah, I mean, I follow a bunch of comic creators on Tumblr. You know, Chip Zdarsky is on there a lot. Mm-hmm. Kieran Gillen is on Tumblr. Those are just the two that pop in my head right now.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's really cool because I think that Tumblr allows for a slightly more personal interaction than Twitter, just because it's a lot easier to post pictures and to talk a little bit more than you can get in the 140 characters that Twitter offers.
Yeah, right. Well, I prefer it, Brian, when someone breaks their essay into 14 tweets. That's I like that a lot more.
Yeah.
Personally,
I'll get like a glimpse at like Kieran Gillen. I think it's Kieran Gillen. His like Warhammer 40K figurines that he's painting or something like
what?
That.
What?
I can't remember if it was him or not. And if I'm wrong, I apologize. I don't want to accuse anybody of that level of nerditude unless it's accurate.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it just, you know, it gives me kind of an eye into their world a little more.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
No, you're absolutely right. There's nothing that quite beats I can't get enough of when Scott Snyder was given like real batarangs made by a fan. It's always fun to see what they're getting from their fans, and him and I think Ray Fox and James Tynion went out into the alley of like after like hanging out in a bar, and they were like practicing with these batarangs.
Oh yeah, I think that was at SDCC or something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah, they had posted a video of it. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. It just gives you a great insight into things, and it may not always be the most newsworthy, but sometimes it's the most unprocessed news, as opposed to some of these sites. Sometimes it just feels like they took the press release from DC or Marvel and were like, all right, just cut, you know, basically format this very, you know, loosely and just send it out.
Chew this up and then regurgitate it to our baby birds.
Yeah, it's sometimes frustrating when you want things that are actually editorialized or curated or, you know, ed ops or things like that. And a lot of these sites tend to be preview/promotional material a lot of the time.
Yeah.
We've got an exclusive 4 pages of whatever, and it's like, okay. I mean, I'm not going to knock it. I'm still going to look at it. But sometimes you... And I realize it's a lot easier to pump out that stuff than it is to just constantly have to read all of this stuff, process it, formulate an opinion, and then put out something more opinion-oriented. But, yeah.
And that actually, you kind of touched on something that I wanted to talk about as well, was, you know, when you're looking at sites like this, like, what is it that you care about? Like, that, like, in terms of, like, the industry or these creators, like, what is it that you're seeking out of these outlets other than, you know, necessarily, like, news about what's coming out? Like, I mean, because we can read the previews guide, or we can go to, you know, the Comixology pull list website and see what books are coming out. But when you're listening to these podcasts, or you're listening, you know, you're checking out these websites, like, what is it that you want to get out of them? Like, if you could say, I want to formulate the perfect outlet for news and information for this type of stuff, what is it that you look for?
I'm usually looking for juicy, revelatory information about people who have frequently and recently left the big two about how bad things were. I'll be honest, like 9% of my reading is at least people who have left the big two and then go on Twitter and get really, really pissed. At least 10% of my information is Rob Liefeld articles about Rob Liefeld. I try to get as many of those in as I can.
Yeah.
No, all joking aside, I'm usually just looking for information about upcoming titles, especially if a publisher is launching a new wave of books, just so I can be ahead of the curve, even though if you read previews again, maybe some of this stuff isn't as necessary. Otherwise, I am really interested in seeing how the industry works. And so anytime someone's going to post processes of how they draw a page and it gets sent to ink and color, or a writer talking about how they have to meet deadlines or things like that, so much of that stuff is so foreign and unknown to me that anytime I get a chance to get that information, I'm always looking forward to that. And like I said before, anytime you actually have people that are writing articles about editorializing, like, okay, DC just launched the DCU, and it sort of reminds us of when DC took this approach 15 or 20 years ago, things like that, where there's a chance to actually learn and contextualize comics and comic history, as opposed to we've got the first four pages of X-Men 37 and it's an exclusive, so check it out,
right?
Because that's not really news. It doesn't mean that I won't look at those things, but all it means is that when I eventually get the issue myself, I just, when I get to those four pages, I'm just like, seen it.
Yeah. What
that,
about you,
that's
Ryan?
That's why I avoid all those previews.
That's why I'm starting to consider avoiding most of those previews. Yeah. It's like, you realize you will be paying for the pages you are reading for free next week.
Yeah, and it's not even like a, it's like I've heard it compared to like movie trailers, where like, you know, you can watch a movie trailer, but that's like, you know, that's 2 minutes of pieces from all over a 2 hour movie.
Heavily chopped pieces, exactly.
Yeah,
the comic book preview, it's always like four consecutive pages, and if you can't sort of develop a thought of what they're getting at, or get something ruined / spoiled / revealed, then you're probably reading a John Hickman book.
Yeah, and like four pages out of a comic book, that's 15-20% of your comic book right there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that I like about getting a lot of my information from podcasts is that, and Less Than Live does this a lot, where Kate will bring somebody on and interview them for a while, and so I can listen to these people talk about their work, and I can get a much better feel for, you know, what this is going to be like, as opposed to just what someone else thinks. You know, I can kind of get into the creator's head a little bit more about it.
Gotcha.
Whereas, you know, podcasts like Super Skull, you get a lot more like conversation going on. Mm-hmm. And beyond these comic books, I kind of exist in a void here in West Michigan, where like there's Now that I don't live with Mike anymore, there's nobody I talk to about comic books with any kind of regularity. Like, I mean, it'll come up when I hang out with John or Xander occasionally, but beyond that, it doesn't really happen. And listening to people talk about comics gets me thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the opinions that I form are a lot stronger and better informed. Just from, like, listening to these people and thinking, like, how would I respond to that? You know, what do I think about this?
Right.
Whereas when I read something, and I don't know if this is like the product of, you know, the public schools or something, like reading for me is almost turned into just digesting information. So like, right. If I need to know like this thing happened, and then this thing happened, and then this thing happened, then reading an article is great for me. But if I want to actually think about it, like, it takes some kind of interaction to really spark it off, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's actually, I mean, to go back to your point of, you know, listening to podcasts where they talk to creators, like, that right there, it, like, solidifies a lot of my views on a book in some ways. And, like, to go off of your point just now is, like, it solidifies, like, how I feel about the creator, and I'm more likely to, like, purchase that book or be more dedicated to that book because I understand mm-hmm. that person more, right? And even when you're listening to a podcast where they're talking about a comic that you read or that you may want to potentially check out, just hearing someone else's opinion and, like, thought on it gives that more validity when you go and buy it rather than just picking something up off the shelf, which I know we, like, recommend all the time on this show. It's just buying something random. But if you hear someone else potentially suggest a book that you may have never heard of or wouldn't regularly check out, that's just all the more reason, which is why we do that type of thing. Like, it seems like a very obvious thing, but we're talking about it. Like, it actually works. Like, it's a thing that it's actually true, right?
Yeah, I mean, we don't spend half an hour at the start of every show talking about what we've been reading and what we are going to read, you know, for our health.
Yeah,
because exactly. These are things that we're excited about.
Yeah, totally.
We want you to be excited.
Yeah.
Dear listener.
Yeah, I think what the two of you are getting at slightly and sort of a point that I'll expound upon a bit is that sort of with comic books, unlike movies, I think to some extent, and unlike some of these larger scale media where hundreds of people are involved, we so strongly associate a comic book with a writer or with an artist or with these people that we have, you know, these personalities that we either follow on Twitter or Tumblr or whatever. Maybe if it's Warren Ellis, then they have a newsletter. And so building those relationships and building those interactions, and when we say looking for news, sometimes it's really just tapping into these people and what they're doing and what they're up to. That really furthers our interest, like you said, furthers our interest in certain books, or maybe doesn't further our interest in certain reads.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
Someone, some new article on Newsarama will discuss how some writer turned out to be some big jerk at a convention or something, and then we'll say, well, you know, I'm not going to read that book because, like I said, unlike movies where you have hundreds of people working on it and maybe one of them, I don't know, didn't signal their left turn signal at a light or something. When a comic book creator or someone does something that we don't like or says something about another creator or maybe does something controversial in their book that we find inappropriate, that so strongly shapes our opinion towards their future books and their current books and what they're working on that ultimately that in a way sort of alters the economy of comic books in a way, if that's not to be too dramatic.
No, I actually think, I mean, and that's been like a growing trend, I think, over the last like 5 to 7 years of just reporting on the like personal like interests and lives of these creators, and it kind of shapes the way that we view them.
For better and for worse.
Yeah, for better and for worse, in the sense that like I mean, like, for instance, this is just the bigger one that I think has been around for a little while longer is like this whole ordeal with Brian Wood in his like most recently he wrote like a newsletter saying like he went to CrossFit and blah blah blah, and it like changed the way that he viewed some people that he don't like 10 years ago he would have like staunchly disagreed with and stuff, and like a lot of people were flipping out. I mean I'm butchering the story itself, but at the end of the day what it came down to was a lot of people's reactions to that story were just like 100% negative. And in my mind, I was like, is this the end of Brian Wood? Like, because these types of outrages online can really, really destroy someone. Like, when was the last time a Rob Liefeld book sold well? Like, he put out some book earlier this year, and I remember listening to the Super Skull podcast. Like, I listened to that same podcast, Brian, and they were just bashing it for 30 minutes. And I don't think that they were the only people out there doing it. I remember seeing so many negative reviews about this book. And that was the book that ended with the number one where the villain character had cut off some guy's dick and had it in a jar, and it was the most ridiculous thing in the entire world. And it's like people were talking shit about that book. I don't think it saw life past issue 3, and if it's still being published, I'd be really, really surprised. But it's like the power of like the way that people talk about creators online has like a major influence, simply because there's only so many comic book readers, and if a large majority of them are reading a lot of these sites, like 50,000 people reading a book could easily drop down to 20,000 if you know more than half of the people disagree with that creator in some way, shape, or form and decides to boycott that book.
In a weird way, that personality interaction is the news now.
Unfortunately,
for better and for worse.
And we see that from sites, and this is why like I have a problem with sites like Bleeding Cool sometimes, is because they'll just negatively attack a creator for one reason or another, just because it seems to be like the popular thing to do. Unlike
sometimes they're like, we found this one tweet by this guy.
Right, and we pulled this tweet out of context.
Six paragraphs.
Exactly. And that's not to say that Bleeding Cool is 100% off. I actually think that they are probably on 51% of the time and off 49%. But... Yeah. That's only a slight majority, but then you look at other websites that are doing similar types of journalism, but in a very, very well-informed, intelligent way that's well-researched and has like the context for everything, such as the Graphic Policy is a site that I think just started popping up, it just came onto my radar. They are a killer news website, and they do reviews, and they do op-ed pieces, but they've covered some really, really heavy topics, and they've done them in the most well-informed, contextual ways possible. Simply to say, we're trying to deliver the most accurate piece of journalism for you, the reader, because we want to inform you of all the facts, and you make your judgment, and I will insert my opinion at the end in case you want to read it. And that's all that we can ask for. And it's not like you said, Nick, it's not like we can see that every day of the week or very often, but it's important to hold that journalistic integrity to a certain extent, rather than just like posting rumors and things just to be the first person to post an idea. And maybe I might be a huge asshole about this and saying it, but I think that is some of the problem with comic journalism in a lot of ways, and I feel like I'm starting to go down a rabbit hole, so I'm just going to end right there. That being said, if you could recommend one place for people, of all the places that you listen to or find information or read and stuff like that, if you could recommend one place to anybody, for better or for worse, what website or podcast or anything would you recommend to people? I know I'm going to put you on the spot and make you think about it, but or even Twitter account to follow. I mean, like, it's as simple as that. I mean, it could be anything. I only say it because I, off the top of my head, I can easily think of three, but if I had to put my finger on one, I would say it would be Comics Alliance, only because I think that they are medium-tier news. They're like a medium-tier news website in the sense that they aren't Comic Book Resources or Newsarama or anything where there's a lot of like big two influence, and they aren't small enough that they're unheard of, and they still have some very like pretty like very well written people on their site. I mean, their authors are very, very, very smart. They do very good journalism, as well as their reviews are very in-depth and well thought out and crafted. They're not out there just to spoil a book for you. They're out to give you an informed opinion, and I can't recommend them enough. They are one of the most honest journalist websites out there. So Brian, do you have any thoughts? Nick, I don't know. I realize like again I put
yeah,
you guys
no,
on the
no,
spot
no, I'm,
so
give me a second here.
Yeah,
go ahead Brian.
For me, it's definitely going to be Less Than Live. Again, that's Kate Leth's podcast. You can find it on iTunes.
Yeah, we'll post a link in the show notes.
But it's a joy to listen to. You know, it's someone who loves comic books talking about the things they love about comic books, talking about like cool things that are happening, you know, bringing on creators. A lot of the times it's creators on like up and coming new projects. Way back when she had Babs Tarr on right when the new Batgirl costume was first dropped, and they were talking about that.
Very cool.
Spent a whole episode talking to I want to say it was Zack Snyder about his time working as a character at Disney.
What?
I could have the wrong guy completely, but it was
Zack Snyder or Scott Snyder?
Scott Snyder.
Oh, okay.
That's the one it was.
Gotcha.
But yeah, just talking about like what it was like to dress up as Pluto or something.
Mm-hmm. And that shaped his life to become a comic book creator, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was like the entire episode. So even when it doesn't have to do a whole lot with comic books, it was hilarious. And I drove aimlessly around instead of going home after work just to finish listening to that podcast.
Oh, that's awesome. What about you, Nick?
Okay, that's, yeah, no, it's tough because every time I think of something, I'm like, well, I don't know if I can unequivocally recommend that. But if you want to talk about something that's maybe a lesser known site that I think is pretty interesting, a lot of times I've found that when I'm trying to look up reviews for maybe a more obscure book or something that's a little bit out there, aka not Big Two, aka not Image, I don't know if, I'm sure you've probably heard of it, Adventures in Poor Taste. Have you ever heard of that site, Mike?
I cannot say that I have.
It rings a okay. bell for me.
They tend to review a lot of stuff that goes a bit under the radar, and their reviews have, you know, a unique voice to them. So I like that site a lot. Otherwise, like I said earlier, I think while it's not an easy recommendation or it's one that requires more input, following creators on Twitter, if you follow the right people, can be really rewarding. You can get all of the interesting art without all of the PR fluff behind it.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to hear people talk about the process or the frustrations, or get the quote-unquote get the real story, or more importantly, have people talk about the Big Two after they've left, which is my favorite topic. Just kidding, not really. It's a really interesting place. Like I said, it's a little bit tricky because it's obviously personality driven. It's obviously not impartial. It's people that are deeply vested in the success or, you know, whatever of their own book. You actually have people talking about the process and their work and all of the craziness that happens at conventions and whatnot. So,
yeah, if I could say two quick things about that, I mean, just Twitter in general, again, the one thing I really do enjoy about following creators is usually they don't post the PR fluff articles. Usually when it, depending on the creator, obviously, but the creators I follow, a lot of times that are posting articles to other sites, such as Annie Wu or David Aha, Matt Fraction when he was on Twitter, Kieran Gillen, and there's probably a couple others that I could think of. Curtis Wybe is pretty good. John Hickman's Twitter is kind of a riot. But usually those creators, when they post things on Twitter that are like reference to an article, usually they're posting the higher quality article depending on where it's coming from. Or it's not just, here are four pages. It's like, here's an interview that I did where I talked about how I like ramen noodles. Or, yeah, you know, as well as the new book that I'm on, which I really enjoy. Yeah. And when I'm not hearing an interview on a podcast necessarily, I do enjoy reading those articles from time to time because they're usually a lot of fun. Alice Kott's also another weird person to follow on Twitter. He's, ooh, yeah. His Twitter is like batshit because he sometimes just goes on like rants where he talks about like existentialism and like his realization about life. Like right after The Surface number 4 came out, it was like a wild ride because that book ended in the most bizarro way possible that I absolutely loved. But Twitter, yeah, I really should have just said Twitter. I shouldn't have said Comics Alliance. I love Comics Alliance, but Twitter is totally where it's at. So, and Annie Wu's Twitter, I totally met Annie Wu at NYCC, and I told her that I loved her Twitter because it is the funniest account you can possibly follow on the internet. And she's one of the funniest people. Not like she's trying to crack jokes or anything, but she's one of those people that's up until 2, 3 in the morning working and just like tweeting random shit because she doesn't want to think about work, but she uses it to escape and then she gets back to work. And it's, I don't know, I love it. I absolutely love it to death.
Thanks for listening to the I Read Comic Books podcast, a production of Destroy the Cyborg. This episode was produced by Mike Rappin and edited by Xander Riggs. This week's music was brought to you by Flamingosis, Dot Phase, and Infinity Shred. If you'd like to keep current with the I Read Comic Books podcast, you can subscribe to it on iTunes and Stitcher. And while you're there, take a quick moment to rate us. If you have a topic you'd like us to talk about, or if you just want to say hi, you can email the show at cyborg@destroythecyb.org. Also, feel free to shoot us a message on Twitter at @destroythecyb, follow us on Tumblr at destroythecyborg.tumblr.com, and check out our subreddit at ireadcomicbooks.reddit.com. And as always, thank you for listening.
Yeah, no, there's some crazy-ass theories. Like, apparently they think Luke's original lightsaber, a.k.a. Anakin's lightsaber, is actually a key to some bullshit Jedi temple.
What?
If you believe that. I mean, it's great. I mean, someone should really just start a Tumblr with all of these things because it's fucking hilarious.
That would be amazing.
Because it's not like it'd be tough. It's not like people aren't manufacturing this shit every damn day. So, yeah, there's that. And then there's some idea that, like, Rilo Ken is going to, like, he's trying to, like, extract Darth Vader's spirit from whatever artifacts or remnants he's found and then bring him back, which is a weird fucking idea because obviously he appears as Anakin Skywalker, whichever version you prefer, at the end of Return of the Jedi, and obviously yeah. In some way he's become one with the Force and he's quote-unquote good again, so I don't know how you're going to resurrect him and not only forcefully, no pun intended, bring him back, but also somehow change his orientation in terms of good slash bad.
Well, it's like maybe Kylo Ren doesn't know that he went good in the end, you know. He's only going off of like what, 20 fucking years of like Darth Vader fucking murdering people, you know.
It's, right, and I guess how many people know that he, like, I mean, Luke knows. I mean, Luke was the only one who stared at that wall and smiled at the ghost of Anakin and Yoda while everyone else was like, what the fuck are you looking at, you doofus? Yeah. Just smiling and looking into space. What a fucking moron. I mean, I realize you lost your dad and shit, but he was evil. That's no excuse to be weird as hell. You know, we got an Ewok party like this to attend.
There's this implicit thing in the first three movies that, like, and I should say four,
sorry,
five,
when
and six,
you say
you know?
First, you've got
yeah, four,
yeah,
five, and six, four, five, and six.
You have to.
That like the Jedi are just like fucking weirdos. Like they just do weird shit, and like you, like, everyone just goes, yeah, it's a Jedi thing. Like just let them be.
Right.
So like, yeah. I don't think that was too out of the ordinary when like, because like Han gives, I feel like Han gives Luke a lot of shit about like the whole Force, especially in the New Hope.
Yeah, new and religions are no match for a good blaster at your side, kid. Yeah,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, when Jedi were like all over the place 20 years ago. Like, they had a centralized force on the biggest planet in the universe. Like,
yeah.
20 might not... Okay, no, not to split hairs. Probably maybe more like 40. Because you've got to think of Obi-Wan's age. Because
Luke is born at the end of episode 3.
Episode 3, yeah.
Okay, no, I'm not sorry. I was thinking more off of like Obi-Wan's 18, age. Because it 20? Seems like... Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Obi-Wan aged hard for those 20
years. Exactly. Yeah. He's fucking on Tatooine. You'd think that'd be like a natural exfoliant for your skin or some shit, but, you know.
Oh, have you ever seen people like live in the desert? They get all like leathery real fast.
Yeah. I don't. Is that a thing? Like, is.
Oh, all the wind and the sun.
Brian just goes to the desert and he's like, show me your skin.
That's how I open most conversations.
Oh, man. Yeah. I'm sure that's show how they end, skin. Too. Oh man,
you'd be surprised.
You'd be what an icebreaker.
Hi, I'm Brian, how's your skin?
What do you lead with? I start with my favorite ice cream flavor is, what about you? Show me your skin,
you filthy human. All right.
Oh man,
yeah,
there you go, Xander.
Another welcome. Subtle implication that I am not actually a person.
Brian is a lizard man.
But yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Brian. I didn't consider the fact that we actually see Luke being born. So yeah, yeah. I don't know. 20 years sounds fair.
Yeah.
Heck, I think Luke maybe is only supposed to be even like 18 or 17.
Right,
so.
But okay, but alternatively, right? The justification for Han's like predisposition towards the Jedi and the Force is, you know, he hasn't been on, I don't think he traveled too often to like central planets where like the Jedi were regular and prominent. So like if he was living his life on the outskirts, like on Tatooine, there were no fucking Jedi, period.
He was on, you know? He was on Corellia. Oh God, here we go. He was on Corellia, which is not a backwards basement planet.
Yeah, Corellia is like to my recollection to Coruscant's New York City.
That's fair. Right. That's okay. Fair. Yeah.
So, but even then, though,
he would still have been
you
really
see these
young.
Guys with lightsabers, and you go, well, whatever. They got lightsabers. They enforce people. Like, how often do you think you came across someone actually performing Force things people, you know?
I mean, if you assume Han is like, if you say Han is 30 when we find him, he would have been maybe 10 at the extinction of the Jedi, which that would have still probably not been the best time to be, the idea that he would have not encountered Jedi is possible. The notion that there's some weird myth and legend to him, that part's a little weird, you know?
There would have had to have been some heavy Imperial propaganda. Like,
that and for all we know, that's probably what it was.
I think Corellia was a heavy recruit. Oh God, man, why do haven't studied this stuff in like 15 studied. I haven't like looked into this stuff in 15 years. This is how heavily ingrained this shit is. That's how bad this is.
Yeah.
Like Corellia was a heavy recruiting planet for the Empire, if I remember correctly, as like a military. I think there was a military academy there as well. So I could be wrong. I'm sure we have some diehard Star Wars fan that will correct us, but. This is what I remember.